Caroline, Willie, D. Mace, 102.5, 106.3, The Game and The Game Nashville app. We're streaming live on Twitch, Twitter, YouTube, and Facebook Live every single day. And we are broadcasting live from the Busy Bee Heating, Plumbing, and Air Conditioning Game Nashville Studios. Home of the $99 yearly Beehive membership, where the buzz is always about great service. D. Mace is here today. No Willie Donick, because he is en route to Vancouver. And we finally, D. Mace, finally have a schedule. It came out in the wee hours early this morning. We finally have a schedule. Game one is officially Sunday at 9 p.m. Gosh. Game two, Tuesday at 9 p.m. And the Predators and Canucks back in Nashville for games three and four at Bridgestone Arena on, Friday, and then Sunday, 6:30 puck drop on Friday, 4 p.m. on Sunday, and then, you know, we'll go from there after the first four games, games five, six, and seven, all TBD. But D-Mace is here. D-Mace, how are you doing?
I'm doing well. I mean, finally got everything situated now, and away we go.
Away we go.
Nashville Predators.
One thing, D-Mace, I'll be frank with you, I was relieved about to see that game three was Friday.
Okay.
Yeah. I thought there was going to be a chance, maybe not a high likelihood, but a chance that game three would be on Thursday night. Ooh, the first round of the NFL draft.
That wouldn't have been good for the NHL.
That would have been the most difficult juggling of two incredibly important things here on this program. So selfishly, I'm very happy we get to dedicate Thursday to the draft and then Friday all to the Nashville Predators.
Yeah, so good luck to the Nashville Predators this Sunday, and hopefully we can end this thing quickly. I got Preds in five. I don't know what y'all think. I got them in five. I want to do a sweep, but I think that would be
bold.
Too, confident.
You can be overly confident.
Or borderline cocky, and I'm not the one that's on the ice. But
You can talk your talk.
But, you know, I got them winning in five. I really do. I think this Predator team, it has the makeup to be a really good team in this year's playoff. It has the makeup to go on a serious run. If you can go on a run like you did during the season, you can go on that same run in the playoffs. And they don't have any major injuries. Guys will get extra rest. And then the good part about it, I guess it's sort of a double-edged sword. Listen, this team hasn't seen the new look Nashville Predators. Mm-hmm. They saw the old Predators and they beat them up a few times, but they haven't saw this Predator team that has kicked it into high gear and is primed, at least to me, is primed to make a run in the playoffs. I think they got the ideal situation in the first round.
This team does feel special.
Yeah.
It feels like it has the makings of a run. And what a quote-unquote run might be, I would say a deep run would be getting to the Western Conference Finals. Mm-hmm. What's the probability of that? Frankly, I wouldn't put a ton of money on it. But get through the Canucks, get past the Canucks, and then we'll have that conversation. But we'll continue the Predators conversation. We're getting you prepped and ready for game one on Sunday. All show long, we have got a packed and loaded show. Robbie Stanley will join us in 1 hour. We'll get his thoughts on the Predators-Canucks matchup. Elliot Friedman of Sportsnet and host of the 32 Thoughts podcast, he will join us at 1 p.m. I'm intrigued to get Elliot's Canadian market perspective on this matchup, because one thing that Barry Trotz has been talking a lot about is the pressure factor, how there's no pressure on the Predators, how being in a Canadian market adds a ton of pressure on the Vancouver Canucks. So we will catch up with Elliot Friedman at 1 o'clock, Robbie Stanley at noon, and of course, it's a Friday, so we'll get into Ask D. Mace at 12:30. Get all of those questions in for D. Mace, 615-737-1025 is the phone number if you want to hop in on the conversation. But I want to start on the NFL draft. Less than 1 week away, and I think we're all getting to the point where it's like, okay, just give me the action, give me the picks, give me the drama. Give me all of the truth behind the smoke screens. I'm ready for it. D-Mace, I know you're ready for it, and the listeners are ready for it as well. We've been talking so much tackle. Mm-hmm. We've been talking so much Joe Alt, Olaf Fashanu, J.C. Latham, and look, rightfully so, this offensive line stinks. And speaking of that, did you see the news? Big breaking news in the NFL last night?
Didn't. What happened? I was at
Andre Dillard to the Green Bay Packers.
I saw that. Yes, and I saw it as I was leaving work. It was earlier enough in the day because I end up going to a a charity event last night.
Nice.
And Zach Piller and his wife were a part of it. They helped put it together, the rally fund, childhood cancer. It was a wonderful, wonderful event.
Amazing.
Got to, you know, sit down with a couple of my old teammates, B-Hop, Neil O'Donnell, KD, Waterson. It was good to see him, and Jason Matthews. So it was good to be there. So I said all that to say this.
It's a fun reunion.
Exactly. It was a fun reunion. Great show. Great event. But I saw it, and I'm like, did they watch the same tape that we were seeing here in Nashville? I wouldn't have touched that man with a 10-foot pole. I wouldn't even let him in the building. He couldn't even guard my – he couldn't even block for my peanut butter and jelly sandwich. I wouldn't have him guard my peanut butter and jelly sandwich. That man can't block you. And I hate to say that because – he was a first-round draft pick. He has played and still do play in the
Josh
NFL.
Rosen was a first-round draft pick, too. So that
and
mean,
he did start some
much.
Games. But even with all that, I think I am qualified to say, Green Bay, he must just be a camp body.
It's definitely not a starting left tackle.
No.
Or a starting player, period. Left tackle, right tackle, guard, center, I don't care what you want to
He can't even be in your mind as far as being a starter. I didn't understand it. I mean, I guess there's only so few tackles out there that, hell, he's 6'7", 300-some pounds. Take him.
I mean, that's – if Green Bay is in a position where they're like, hey, we just need to get bodies in here, then I get it.
Yeah.
But
they're looking for him to be some upgrade? Nah.
I don't have a feeling that Andre Dillard is in the conversation for competing for a starting position on the offensive
not
line.
Not one. Nope. Not one. Not at all.
Well, but good for him. Good for Andre Dillard. So Andre Dillard to the Green Bay Packers. Congratulations to Andre Dillard. Good luck to Jordan Love. But we've been talking a lot of offensive line, and rightfully so. The offensive line was terrible. You're in a position to take one of the, if not the, top tackle in the draft. But we've also been talking about the philosophical question that's been facing us and this team, and really even Brian Callahan since 2021, and that's receiver or tackle, assuming that you're in a position to take a premier tackle and assuming that you're also in the position to take a premier wide receiver. We've talked a lot about what's the gap between Joe Alt and everybody else. What's the difference? What's the gap between Joe Alt, Olafash New, Amarius Mims out of Georgia, J.C. Latham out of Alabama, all of the offensive linemen and the tackles that we view as first-round picks? What are the gaps between those? Can the Titans maybe trade back to 11, pick up an Olafash New, and still feel really good about the left tackle position? So let's talk about gaps with the wide receivers. I've been talking about ever since these draft conversations started in, December, January, February, talking about the trio of the top receivers in this draft, the trio of receivers that we view to be top 10 picks, top 12 picks probably at the very least. Marvin Harrison Jr., Malik Nabers, and Roma Dunze. I would believe the consensus is that it's those receivers in that order. Marvin Harrison, Malik Nabers, Roma Dunze. There is some conversation about maybe Nabers being the top receiver in this draft. Or maybe Nabers and Harrison are really 1A, 1B, and Roma Dunze is in a different area code. So I'll ask you, D-Mace. You've done the eval, the breakdown. You've watched the tape. What's the gap between those three receivers, keeping in mind that that very well could be a position that the Titans are targeting with the 7th overall pick?
And this is what makes it – because they all three do something a tad bit different, meaning they do something well. Like, to me, Harrison is more of the – even though he does have the speed, even though he didn't get clocked. But if you watch him play, the kid has speed. His thing is the red zone. He's a big body guy, 6'2", 6'3". And he has a huge catch radius. And that's good for in the red zone. Something that I was screaming last year about, D-Hop. Like, use him in the red zone as much as you possibly can because of his catch radius. Huge hands. Now, I'm looking at, Harrison. His hands are not big. I mean, I guess they're average size, or a little bit below 10 inch, like 10. But
what
would
you say is standard for an NFL receiver?
I guess it would. And this is what I was looking up too, because I based it. I looked at my hand size. My hand size when I went to the draft was 10. Mm-hmm. Then I look at Harrison and these other guys. They're like 9 something. And I'm thinking like, so what is average hand size for receiving? I'm guessing it's around 9-ish, a little bit over 9. So I guess they fit right into that hand size measurement. You don't want to be below the average. And again, I can assume at least the top 10 prospects at that position, hand size has to be around 9. So I think he falls in with it.
For reference, D-Hop's hands are 10.
Yeah, D-Hop's hands
are 10. And he's known for having bigger hands, you know, sticky kind of hands.
Exactly. So that's why I looked at that, because those things, you know, do they mean something? But when these guys are so closely comparable, you look for the things that kind of push one guy over the other. Like you look at Harrison. Well, he didn't run. You look at Adunze. He did run. Neighbors did run. So we know foot speed, like clock foot speed. We believe and we see on film that Marvin Harrison Jr. is fast. He don't get caught. He outruns everybody. But when you start to look at, you know, why Neighbors have moved up the board, it's because of the 40 time. Mm-hmm. That's it. That's the only thing he has done different than Marvin Harrison. He and Adunze is run 40. 3-cone drill, stuff like that. That's the only thing they've
vertical.
Done. Is that vertical? That's the only thing they've done different than Marvin Harrison. That's why I believe people are, there's this constant back and forth with Neighbors and Harrison. Had Harrison ran and say he ran a 4.3, even a 4.4, I think he would have been a consensus. He's the number one guy. But because you didn't run, now we got this question mark. Mm-hmm. We're not saying that you're not fast. We just want to see it. We want to be able to clock it and justify even more why you're the number one guy.
If you were a general manager and you were looking to pick a receiver in the top, mm-hmm. let's say 8 picks, mm-hmm. and you had, you know, you were looking at Neighbors and Harrison, would you be turned off by Harrison not running a 40?
I wouldn't be turned off, but if they're closely comparable, then something has to sway one way or the other. Like, something has to sway me one way or the other. Maybe it's the numbers. If I look at all the measurables, maybe it's, okay, I'm taking Harrison because he's 6'3", you know, 215. A lot of his touchdowns came in a red zone. Then you look at Neighbors, who's 6 foot. He's going to be a great receiver, potentially. Mm-hmm. But those little bitty measurables, like in the red zone, okay, will I take this guy over that guy? That's what it boils down to when you have two guys or even three guys with Adunze so closely comparable. I think Adunze is the third guy. Neighbors, to me, is the second guy closely. Mm-hmm. But then, again, it's Marvin Harrison, number one. So all three of these guys, I think. Neighbors, to me, is more of a – even though I think you can put – Adunze and Harrison in the slot, I think Neighbors is a better fit. I think he's going to end up possibly being the most versatile receiver. But I think the impact right away will be Marvin Harrison. Neighbors will possibly sort of be that Swiss Army knife. Like, he could play all three positions. And then you look at Adunze. He's sort of I look at him sort of a Keenan Allen type of player, or a Mike Evans type of player. Like, he's going to be just consistent.
In terms of size as well?
In terms of size, because Adunze is what, 6'3"? Mm-hmm. He's 6'3". Obviously, Mike Evans is 6'5". But it seems like they have that sort of same makeup, big body
stockier
guys, stockier guys. Not like great speed, but good speed, really good speed. I think Adunze clocked at, what, a 4.45, somewhere around there, 4.43 when he ran at his pro day. So he has good speed. But he's a guy I think is going to, throughout his career, barring injury, he's going to have numbers that are consistent. And you're not going to notice it unless you start paying attention to him. He's going to be a Mike Evans guy. 1,000 yards, 1,000 yards, 1,000 yards, 8 touchdowns, 9 touchdowns, 8, 10 here. And you look at it and you, oh, he's, but then you look at his career, it's like, man, in 10 years, he has over 12,000 yards and X amount of touchdowns, but he did it quietly like Mike Evans. Marvin is, he's going to have the quickest impact, I believe, of any one of these wide receivers. But then Neighbors, I think, is ultimately, he may ultimately be the best of them all because of his versatility. He can play inside, he can play outside, you can do different things with him. So all three are good route runners. What I am concerned about all three is none of these guys get pressed. What I worry about with spread offenses in college is that none of these receivers ever get touched. That's why I like to see receivers when they play against Alabama.
Yeah.
Teams that love to play man-to-man and get in your face. If you can win battles like that, consistently against coverage like that, then you're good. But I'm not sure any of these guys face true press coverage. That's what they're going to have to get used to. Seeing press coverage more times than not, because I guarantee you, in college they rarely saw press coverage, if at all. Mm-hmm. And that's something that you gotta, once you come into the NFL, you gotta get accustomed to playing against, because if teams find out you can't get off the press, what are they gonna do? They're gonna press you more times than not.
Right.
So that's the thing I'm worried about with all three. Can they get off the press, because they've never really truly faced press coverage other than probably in practice?
Yeah.
But if you're talking about in games, I've watched Marvin Harrison tape. I don't think anybody ever really truly pressed them. I don't think it's hard to press a Dunze because they have this spread out wide offense.
And defenses in the Pac-12.
Exactly.
They're not exactly. Outside of Utah, I think,
Utah has some good defenses,
but more so up front. Mm-hmm. They don't have the quickest of corners.
Exactly.
Oregon had a solid defense this past year, but again, because of what they could do up front rather than in the backfield. So when somebody asked me about Neighbors, because I watch every LSU game. Mm-hmm. I watched a lot of Malik Neighbors. They asked me what would be his biggest weakness or what would be the biggest hurdle for him going into the NFL. And that's what I said, getting off of press coverage. Mm-hmm. Because at the college level, I mean, he could outrun most corners.
Yeah.
So he wasn't even getting faced, really.
No.
He wasn't getting pressed that hard because he could just get off of it. And if they could keep up with his speed, well, Malik Neighbors has the quickness to just shake him. Like, he can just change direction on a dime. Mm-hmm. When you're looking at some of the top corners in the world, when you're playing up against some of the best cornerbacks and the best DBs in the National Football League, they're going to be able to keep up with you. Mm-hmm. And they're going to be able to see what you're doing and to be able to keep up with your change of direction.
Yeah, because it's more so of, these guys, the really good defensive backs in this league, it's not necessarily about – they're watching receivers and they're picking up on small tendencies. But it's more about studying offenses, knowing in certain, bunch coverages, bunch sets or 3-by-1s or 2-by-2s, you learn how to read routes. You learn how to read patterns. If this guy's running a post, then I know more than likely on the backside there has to be a deep end coming in from somewhere, or a crosser coming in, or a go route. So you start to pick up on those tendencies in regards to, the offenses. And to me, these guys, they're all going to excel in this league. I truly do, other than, maybe injury slowing them down some. But I worry about press. I worry about being able to – it's easy to get up on a board and sort of, this covers this. No, but it's different when you got to be there and you got to read it within a second. And defenses in National Football League, they disguise a lot better than what they do in college. No longer do you have these wide hashes that you had in college. That makes a difference too. Now you have these, these more condensed – hashes. Now you have to, as a receiver, you have to be able to read on the run because these defenses are changing. You got linebackers, you know, sprinting out to be corners. You got linebackers sprinting up to be safeties. Safeties coming down to be corners. Safeties resting off the edge. Mm-hmm. You got to know who's who, what's what, and who's where as you're running your route. So to me, because they didn't have to face all of this, these are some of the things that you're concerned about, but you figure they're good enough athletes. Mm-hmm. They've excelled at the high school level more than likely. They've excelled at the college level we've seen. So what, there's nothing telling me based upon what I've seen of all three that they will not excel at the NFL level.
So coming up next, I want to continue this conversation, and we've been faced with a lot of hypotheticals, and we'll mm-hmm. continue to do that. If Neighbors or Alt is there, you know, what do you do? That's a really difficult conundrum, really, because you're faced mm-hmm. with the question that we asked Brian Callahan, and he said, well, if all things are equal, I'll take the elite touchdown score versus the elite non-touchdown score. Well, are all things equal there? And let's say Neighbors is gone mm-hmm. by the time the Titans pick. Very high likelihood that he is. Is Adunze or Alt as difficult of a question as answering Neighbors versus Alt? The gap between Neighbors and Adunze. We'll get into that coming up next. We'll get into your thoughts as well. 615-737-1025 is our phone number. Caroline, Willie D. Mays, we're brought to you by Zen Sports. Start earning cash rewards on your bets today. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-889-9789. Terms and conditions apply. Must be 21 or older and in Tennessee to bet. Caroline, Willie, D. Mays. Hey, tune into 102.5 and 106.3 The Game this Sunday for coverage of the Geico 500 at Talladega Super Speedway. Coverage will begin at 1 p.m. with the race starting at 2 p.m. Coverage also available on the 102.5 The Game app and at thegamenashville.com. Robbie Stanley will join us in 30 minutes. We'll preview Predators at Canucks for Game 1 of the Stanley Cup playoffs. Elliot Friedman will join us at 1 p.m. And, of course, it's Friday, so we'll get into your questions for D. Mays at 1235-615-737-1025 is the phone number if you want to get in on the conversation. But now we're talking NFL draft, and we're talking receivers. Because it's a high likelihood that the Titans could be in on a receiver in the first round of the draft. I mean, it's on the table. It's on the table. We've been talking gap between Joe Alt, Noah Fashanu, but what about the gap between the receivers? I think the toughest conundrum at this point is, you know, if somebody asks you, okay, well, you're Rand Carthon, mm-hmm. Malik Neighbors, and Joe Alt on the board, who are you going to take? And frankly, whichever way you go, I don't think you're wrong. Mm-mm. I think you can justify either pick. I think they're two great players. Left tackle is obviously a more pressing need. It's higher on the list of priorities, positional priority, if that's what you want to call it. But Malik Neighbors also has the makings of being a superstar in this league. So however you want to answer that question, I don't think you're wrong. But D-Mace, you've been looking at it. You've been breaking it down. Been breaking down the differences between these receivers. The big three is what we'll call them. Mm-hmm. Marvin Harrison, Malik Neighbors, and Rome Odunze. Is Rome Odunze or Joe Alt as difficult of a question as Malik Neighbors or Joe Alt?
I don't think so.
AKA, is Rome Odunze even in the same stratosphere as Malik Neighbors or Marvin Harrison?
Yes. If I had to take him, you know, it would be Harrison. I've loved Harrison, you know, even last year. I thought he should have, if he would have came out last year, he probably would have been a number one receiver taken last year in the draft. So I got Harrison, Neighbors close, and Adunze right there, but I don't think he's too far off. So to me, if it's Alt and Neighbors, then we got to seriously think about, you know, okay, how are we going to do this? Even though I still believe you take the tackle, but I'm sure there are people that would be in the room thinking, we may not be able to pass up on this guy. You know, there's probably a gap between the third guy and the fourth or fifth guy. So if we get him now, then, you know, we add an instant ultimate playmaker to our, you know, offensive side of the ball. But then again, we need a tackle. I think if Adunze was there, clearly it would be Alt. I don't think Adunze, if he is there, he gives you the ability to trade out of 7 if you wanted to. I think if Neighbors there, Neighbors gives you the ability to trade out, because I think teams would be looking to move up to get neighbors quicker, yeah, than it would a Doomsday. So, you know, if you're just talking about from a value standpoint, would it be better to have the scenario of neighbors and alt? Because you figure I can move. People want neighbors. Some even have neighbors above Marvin Harrison Jr. So it's possibly easier to move out of that spot than it would be a Roma Dunze, even though people still consider him a top 10 pick. But neighbors is more like a top 5 pick. And there's a difference between top 5 and top 10.
Oh, yeah.
So you may be able to get more of a trade value if neighbors is there rather than a Dunze. Even though I still like a Dunze, I would take the tackle. Even though I love neighbors, still would take the tackle. So to me, it wouldn't be that great of a decision. Like, I wouldn't be sort of torn between those three guys. Because to me, is I need to tackle.
Yeah.
But if I'm looking to trade down, I'm like, please let neighbors be there.
Is there a wide receiver you would take the tackle over?
Is there a wide receiver I would take a tackle?
Excuse me. Is there a wide receiver you would take over a tackle? Excuse me.
Harrison.
Yeah, he's the one.
Yeah, he's probably. But even with that one, it's like, I would try to see how much I can get for the pick. But if they're not willing to give up that pick, then I just take Marvin Harrison Jr. To me, in some drafts, he is a number one pick, Marvin Harrison. Yeah. That's how good he is. I think neighbors in some drafts is a top two or three pick. I don't think Adunze is a top five pick in any draft. I think he's more of a top 10 pick, like from 6 to 10. But those other two guys, you know, Harrison in some drafts could be a number one pick. Mm-hmm. Adunze, neighbors could be a number two or number three pick in some drafts. So,
and a top 10 pick is still pretty darn good.
Oh, yeah, it's still good. I mean, I take it, but I'm looking at it from trade value standpoint. I think people would be more willing to trade up to get neighbors than they would be trade up to get a Doomsday. I think you would be more inclined to trade back if a Doomsday's there. Mm-hmm. If your tackle's not there, you would be more willing to trade back. Now, if neighbors was there, I think you would try to stay at that spot. I think you would stay at that spot unless somebody gave you, like, I don't know, maybe two or three first rounders to try to move up, like two first rounders to try to move up to get him. I think neighbors would, he's that type of receiver.
Yeah.
As is Marvin Harrison. But then I think Adunze is just right beneath those two guys.
I think an interesting scenario could be if you're sitting at 7 and both neighbors and Adunze and all three of them are available at 7. And Chicago's looking at it like, we want to get our receiver. And we want Malik Nabers with Caleb Williams. Mm-hmm. Like, can you imagine? Caleb Williams and Malik Nabers? My goodness. But if Chicago was like, we'll throw a second rounder or a third rounder in there, and all I have to do is go back to 9, I wouldn't hate that.
I wouldn't hate it either.
Because Atlanta's got their tackle at 8.
Uh-huh.
Alt could fall to 9.
Oak could fall to 9, but it just depends on what guys are, you know, if one of those big time wide receivers is still there. More importantly, if neighbors is still there. I don't think a Doomsie will get you what you need in regards to moving back.
Right.
I think neighbors will get that. Obviously, I think Marvin Harrison will get that. But if he's there, that's one of those deals like, man, we may just have to take him.
Yeah.
And get our tackle in the second round. Even though I want to tackle, he's one of those guys he's sort of like a Jamar Chase, a Jefferson. Look at their career now. Mm-hmm. You almost can't pass him up.
It would be really hard.
Yeah.
I'm trying to put myself in that position, that if I'm in that draft room and I'm looking at my board and I've got, you know, Malik Nabers as the second best non-quarterback in this draft and he's sitting there for me for the taking, and I hear everything that Brian Callahan and Rand Carthon have said about the offense in the offseason, that they want to be more explosive, they want to spread it out, they want to, you know, Brian Callahan has said, I want guys that can find the paint.
Yeah,
that's what Malik Nabers would be.
Yeah,
and that's just for the taking. So that would be really tough. And I would have zero issue whatsoever if the Titans decided to go neighbors over a tackle in the first round. Because whenever you start to prioritize need over elite players, that's when you start to get yourself in a really tough position. That's how you end up with Corey Davis with the fifth overall pick, and you don't get fifth overall pick kind of production because you need a receiver.
Yeah, you need a receiver, but I consider a elite player as well. He's just an elite tackle. And listen, there's nothing like having an elite tackle. There's nothing like having a tackle that, again, I've said this all the time, there's nothing like having a tackle that you just don't have to worry about.
Yeah.
There was plenty. I never worried about with either team. Never worried about the Tennessee Titans because B-Hop was over there. Never worried about him. Now, if he was injured a little bit, then, yeah, you're like, okay, how long is Hoppy going to hold up? But typically, Hoppy did his job. Uh-huh. But you never worried about Hoppy because you knew he had it on lockdown. And Jonathan Ogden, you never worried about Jonathan Ogden because it was like, okay, everybody else is trying to scheme around that left tackle. Mm-hmm. You ain't got to worry about him. Everybody's trying to run away from him. Like, let's put our best defensive end on the other side.
Yeah.
You know, that's what they were doing when B-Hop was the tackle for the Titans, or when, you know, Jonathan Ogden was the tackle for the Baltimore Ravens. So to me, they are impact players. There are elite players, but they don't get the notoriety because, I mean, tackle isn't sexy. Yeah, they don't score that. Every once in a while, they may score a touchdown. Every once in a while.
Never discredit.
As Taylor Lewan scored a touchdown now.
Never discredit a thick six.
Exactly. So, I mean, that's an elite talent. It's just as a team, when you're as a GM coach, when you're evaluating your team, you know, do we need that elite tackle or do we need that elite receiver?
But again, need gets you in some sticky situations.
Yeah, but this is different.
Best player available.
Yeah, this is different because the best player, if I'm just saying, if Alt is there.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if Alt's not there, then obviously you got to go to plan B, whatever plan B is, and maybe the trade out of that or whatnot. But to me, you know, Alt, if Alt is there, you got to take him because he probably more than likely will be the best player on the board and a player of need. So I don't think we have to sort of get away from, and I understand what everybody's saying, don't draft based upon need, you just draft the best player. I get that part because that can get you, you know, you have your roster looking sideways after a while.
Yeah.
But Alt would be the best player possibly at a position of need. So in this situation,
if that's the case.
Yeah, in this situation, that is, you got to take that out of it.
Mm-hmm.
The whole don't draft for need, draft best player. You got to take it out of that equation right now because, you know, he may be the best player at the position of need for you.
Yeah.
You know, so that's the way I look at it.
I want to get into some of your thoughts on this. Our phone lines are driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. 615-737-1025 is the phone number if you want to get in on the conversation. One texter texts in and says, can you think of a scenario where we could get out and Neighbors or Harrison?
You can get out the seventh pick and still draft Neighbors or Harrison? That's what they're saying?
Let's just say, can you think of a scenario we could get Neighbors or Harrison? Yeah,
totally. Oh, of course. I mean,
I would say there's a higher likelihood of Malik Neighbors falling to you at seven than Marvin Harrison at seven because I think that there's enough wide receiver needy teams ahead of you.
Mm-hmm.
The Arizona Cardinals, the LA Chargers, perhaps even the Giants that would be in on the Harrison sweepstakes before they would take Malik Neighbors. But especially if quarterbacks go in the top four or even top five, like if Arizona trades out with Minnesota or the Chargers trade out with Minnesota or the Raiders and they take quarterbacks, that just pushes all of those players down to you. So there's absolutely scenarios where more specifically Malik Neighbors or even Marvin Harrison could fall to you at seven. Absolutely.
Yeah, they could. I mean, Adunze more than likely will fall to you at seven no matter what. But there's a possibility.
Is he the seventh best player in this draft?
Is he the seventh best player in this draft? See, three quarterbacks, and I'm not even counting J.J. McCarthy. You got three quarterbacks. You got a left tackle. You got a defensive end. You got two wide receivers. that goes before him. So
even Bowers?
Bowers. He and Bowers may be like they, you know, they round out the top 10 as far as players, elite players. Like those are the 10 players. You know, but is he a top? I don't think he's a top 7 player. Just like all around, mm-hmm. like if we're just taking out position, I don't think he's a top 7 player. Now, again, is he a top 10 player? Yes, he's a top 10 player. But if you have him and Alt sitting there, Alt still wins because not only is he the higher graded player, but he's also a player of need. Mm-hmm. So in a situation like that, you take Alt. You don't take Roman Dunze.
Yeah. But to the player, to the texter's point, I don't know if this texter intended to say to get out of the 7th overall mm-hmm. pick, but I do think if you trade back, let's say it's 11 to Minnesota. I don't see Malik Nabers or Marvin Harrison falling to 11.
No, neither one of them, I don't think. If they fall to 11, there would have to have been some trades, you know, above like two trades specifically.
There would have had to have been, let's say, both Minnesota and Denver trade up into the top 10. Let's say one with Arizona, maybe one with the Chargers to take quarterbacks.
Exactly.
And there's then five or even six quarterbacks taken in the top 10 from just maybe Malik Nabers to fall to 11. And I think the likelihood of that happening is like 0.1% chance. Indy Ben, our dear friend Indy Ben Texan, says, did I just hear Derek compare Alt to an elite tackle like Jonathan Ogden? He's nowhere near the prospect Ogden is. He's been compared to guys like Jake Matthews and Eric Fisher. I think the Titans are in a spot where they almost have to go left tackle round one with how bad their offensive line is.
I wasn't comparing the play. I'm comparing the I don't have to worry about. And I don't know how you label that. That's what I'm comparing.
A set and forget.
Yeah, a set and forget. That's what it's called. I set and I forget about him as if he's not there.
You're taken care of.
You're taken care of. I ain't got to worry about it. You're blocking my blind side. That's what I talk about when I mention B-Hop. And Jonathan Ogden, two guys that you didn't have to worry about once you set them on the left side. And I think Alt's going to be that type of guy that you're not going to have to worry about. Now, will he be a Hall of Famer like J.O.? I don't know. Will he be close to B-Hop? I don't know, but I think he will be a damn – B-Hop was a damn good left tackle, but he played in the air with so many damn good left tackles. One, Jonathan Ogden, that sometimes you just get pushed down and forgotten in a sense, but it doesn't diminish the job that you're doing. He was our Jonathan Ogden, meaning B-Hop.
Yeah.
And I think Alt would be that for us as well. Our Jonathan Ogden, our B-Hop. I'm not comparing them like play. I'm just saying put him over there like you said. Set and forget. Let's go to another position.
And to his point about, you know, the Titans have to take left tackle because their offensive line is so bad. Having that approach in the first round at all, but specifically at the 7th overall pick, a top 10 pick, if you start getting into, well, you have to do this conversations, you set yourself up for failure because you're setting yourself up to take, to not get your the bang for your buck, so to speak, to just take the best player available at a certain position, even if that player isn't deserving or worthy of the 7th overall pick. The Titans don't have to do anything.
No.
The Titans have to find a great player. The Titans have to find a difference maker. The Titans have to find a player that's going to be part of their plan for the next 6, 8, 10, 12, 15 years. If that's a left tackle, great. If that's a receiver, cool. If that's Brock Bowers, awesome. If that's Dallas Turner, okay, fine. What they have to do is find a great player. I don't think it has to come at any specific position. There's too many needs on this team to kind of go into that rabbit hole of only one position. All right, coming up next, we heard from a Vancouver play-by-play guy, the play-by-play for the Canucks. We heard that yesterday. And he mentioned where the sense of confidence is coming from the Canucks fan base. And I want to get into the Nashville perspective of that. We'll get into that coming up next. We'll catch up with Robbie Stanley in 15 minutes. Caroline Willie D. Mays, 1025, 1063, The Game.
How did the people of Vancouver feel when it became official last night that it would, in fact, be the Nashville Predators that the Canucks were drawing in round one?
Hey, good to join you guys. But first of all, it was a situation where the Vancouver Canucks haven't been to the playoffs in a long time. So this fan base, first of all, it was just jubilation because it's been a couple of years of pain. But when it comes to the Predators, okay, this is the dilemma that the Canucks fans, like any other fan base, had in the Western Conference. You know you're running into a good team, whoever you play, but those games early on in the season that Vancouver did play against Nashville, they feel good about them, right? That's an opposition where you did the season sweep. So rather than playing a Vegas, you feel good about playing Nashville better. I don't think that's nobody's thinking this is an easy series. It's going to go a long way probably, but that Predators team that the Vancouver Canucks saw earlier in the year, it was a very different team. So I want to say, Canucks fans are cautiously optimistic, but pick your poison, right? All the teams that they could have played were going to be difficult.
That was Randeep Janda, a Canucks game analyst for Sportsnet in Vancouver. Caroline Willie DeMays. Robbie Stanley will join us in about 10 minutes. We'll talk Predators Canucks in the first round of the Stanley Cup playoffs. And one thing that he mentioned there that gives a lot of Canucks fans hope, excitement, encouragement about the Canucks to beat the Predators in, 5, 6, 7 games, however many games this series goes, is the games that the Canucks just kind of, frankly, walloped the Predators in earlier this season. Let's pull it up. October 24th, Vancouver beat the Preds 3-2. October 21st, Vancouver beat the Preds 5-2. And then later on December 19th, Vancouver beat the Predators 5-2. So if I'm a Canucks fan, I get that. I get feeling confident and getting encouragement out of that. We've seen this team 3 times already. Mm-hmm. And we whooped them all 3 times. And I've seen this come across in our text line. I've seen conversations on Preds Twitter. Fear or anxiety from Predators fans about those 3 games in particular. Now, Vancouver fans can feel however they want. But, Demas, I want to get your thoughts on this as well. My message to Predators fans is, not only is this a very different Canucks team mm-hmm. that we saw earlier in the season, this is a very different Predators team mm-hmm. now than we saw in October, now than we saw in December. Remember, we were talking about the 5-10 team. We were talking about Roman Josi not mm-hmm. looking like Roman Josi. We were talking about UC Soros not really looking like UC Soros. I mean, this team as a whole and its star players weren't playing up to the standard that we have grown accustomed to. Well, now UC Soros is playing like one of the best goaltenders, if not the best goaltender in the entire world. Now Roman Josi looks like vintage Roman Josi, if not better than vintage Roman Josi. Now he's Norris Trophy finalist Roman Josi. So I understand that anxiety from Predators fans and frankly the encouragement from Vancouver fans. These are 2 very different teams. This is a different Canucks team, frankly, that's kind of cooled down a bit, and this is a Predators team that's just clicked, that's figured things out since then.
Yeah, it is. It's a much different and this is what I alluded to in the first segment when we started, was the team that Vancouver saw. And I understand the team that the Predators saw too, but we know where the Predators were at when they played the Canucks, in the first half of the season. And they were not in a good place as a team. They still were trying to figure things out as a unit. So they didn't get the best. They didn't run into the best version of the Nashville Predators. We can't say we didn't run into the best version of that time of the Vancouver Canucks, because I think you did. You ran into the best version of that team at that particular time.
They came out the gate.
Yeah, they were a much better team than you were. Mm-hmm. I think cautiously optimistic is the right phrase, because you go into a situation knowing that you're facing a vastly different team. And for the better, not for the worse, for the better. So you go in optimistic because you've beaten them, 3 times already? But cautious because you beat them 3 times and it was early on. That's like the old theory in hockey, having a 3-goal lead in the first period ain't good.
Dangerous lead in hockey.
Dangerous. You're cautiously optimistic that you're going to win, but you know there's 40 minutes of hockey left to play. So you better be on your game. I think that's how Canuck fans are with facing the Predators. We beat them, so we feel good about that. Because had you lost 3 times, mm-hmm. they didn't have no room to be optimistic.
Right.
cautious, yeah, but not optimistic. But because you beat them, you're optimistic, but you know you're running into a different Predator team, so you're cautious in regards to that. I've said that I think the Predators win in five. I think they are.
I wish I had your
better
team optimism
at this point. Not to say Vancouver doesn't have good players and they're not playing good hockey,
right?
But I think the Predators are playing a little bit better at this point. That's why Vancouver is so cautious about this matchup, because they are a much better team and a different team than what they were when you faced them in the beginning of the season.
Speaking of that, we'll continue to get into this Predators and Canucks matchup with Robbie Stanley, who will join us coming up next. Tune into 102.5 and 106.3 The Game today as Vanderbilt baseball takes on Florida with pregame at 5:45 p.m. and first pitch at 6 p.m. I went to the game last night, at least before the rain delay, and it was a blast. I had a great time. Vanderbilt baseball brought to you by Smoky Mountaintops, your countertop experts. Visit SmokyMountaintops.com.